A Plot to Kill, a true story of deception, betrayal, and murder in a quiet English town. In October 2015, Peter Farquhar was found dead in his house in Mays Morton, lying on the sofa next to a bottle of whiskey. An inquest was made, and Peter's death was quickly ruled to be an accident. But after the death of another elderly neighbour, the dreadful truth began to emerge. It's the story, it's the subject behind a new book called by criminalist David Wilson. The book is called A Plot to Kill. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from David himself. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, sir. And yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you. I'll go out walking later, so I tend to do about 10 miles a day at the moment because I'm also filming at the moment, and so that's a way to keep my weight down.
Good to get out and about. Tell us a little bit about then, you've described this as, you know, a case that sort of really shocked you because it was somewhat close to home.
Yeah, I live in Buckingham. The book is, you mentioned Mays Morton there. Mays Morton is really a suburb of Buckingham, and I've lived in and around Buckingham for the last 30 years. And of course, as a criminologist, people asked me constantly, are you going to write about the murder of Peter Farquhar? And initially, I was really reluctant to do so because I know how writing about these kinds of events can cause lots of people to become quite emotional. And whilst they might say they want to know a great deal about it, in fact, when you start to interview them, they tend to close up. It's very close to home, as you were saying. But eventually, I felt it was so extraordinary. It was a story that needed to be told because, of course, Buckingham, Mays Morton, it's a very privileged locale. And in the immediate aftermath of the realization that Peter had been murdered, there was a kind of media frenzy to want to say, you know, it was like an episode out of Midsummer Murders. And I felt it was a far more important story than that, which is why I was encouraged to write it.
That's what I was about to say. You took the words right out of my mouth about that whole thing about it being a beautiful area of the UK, a privileged area of the UK, if you like, some of the neighbourhoods there. And it does have that feel to it, doesn't it? And it's always a situation where people say, we never thought that this would happen, you know, in our little hamlet, in our little town.
And of course, as I point out in the book, murder happens wherever people gather. They can happen in our troubled inner cities, but they can happen on remote Welsh mountains or in Scottish Highland villages. Murders happen wherever people gather, wherever some people have it in their interest to behave appallingly to someone else. And that's really what happened in relation to Peter Farquhar. His killer, Ben Field, simply used Peter for his own ends in a very psychopathic way.
So tell me a little bit about Peter Farquhar then. What sort of man he was and why he was groomed and why he became this victim?
Yeah, Peter Farquhar had a very distinguished career as a teacher. He was the former head of English at Stowe School, which is one of the leading public schools in England. After his retirement from Stowe School, he took a part-time lecturing job at the University of Buckingham, which is the only private university in England, where he lectured in English literature, and that's where he's going to encounter his killer, Ben Field. Peter was also somebody who was a Christian, had a very deep faith, but he was also gay, and that kind of tension between his sexuality and his faith is a pattern in his life. And the other thing that was the beginning for me to write the book was that Peter had published three novels. To be perfectly blunt, nobody had read the novels who had written about the murder in the newspapers. And so my starting point, because I had met Peter on one or two occasions, but I didn't really know him. So I thought I would start my research by reading the three books that he had published. And it was quite clear that one of those books was in fact a template that was used by his killer to kill Peter.
Wow. God, quite shocking. So how did Peter come into contact then with Benjamin, the young man who would eventually kill him? Or was it vice versa? Did Benjamin find Peter and decide that he was going to use him to his ends?
That's a very, very interesting question, because I think there's been an initial belief that somehow that it was 69 when he was murdered. Benfield was in his 20s. They first encounter each other at university, at the University of Buckingham, when Field is in his final year and is going to take a module that Peter Farquhar runs on romantic literature. And now, the temptation has always been, and certainly many people said this at the time to me, was that somehow Peter, because of his sexuality, was attracted to the younger man. I actually get the impression that Field had elements of gerontophilia, which is the fancy name for saying that he was sexually attracted to much older people. But whether that's true or not, I think it personally is, it's quite clear that Field saw it in his interests to begin to groom Peter. Grooming is a term we tend to associate the old doing to some older men doing to some younger children. But in fact, grooming in this case was Field doing it, I think, to a much older man. And also grooming us. He groomed us as a community to accept that he was a serious scholar and a committed Christian. And indeed, Field would go on to become a deputy church warden at the church where he and Peter worshipped, and was only 5 days away at the time of his arrest for Peter's murder from going on ordination training and becoming a priest. I mean, you couldn't make this story up.
The other thing is the fact that there's not any sort of Peter's death, but then there's the pretty following after Peter's death, there is another mysterious death only a few doors away.
Yes, one of Peter's neighbors, again, a former teacher called Anne Moore Martin. So again, look at the kind of indiscriminacy in terms of how Field targets both men and women. During the time he's also betrothed to Peter, he's also seeing younger women, and he's using the gay meeting app called Grindr to meet men and sell sexual services. He is very indiscriminate about his sexuality and his sexual interests. And after Peter dies, after he's murdered Peter, although initially it was believed that Peter had died as a result of acute alcohol poisoning, it was only later that the police would realize that he had been murdered in other ways because they exhumed his body. Field moves on to a near neighbor called Anne Moore Martin, who also will subsequently die, although Field is not found guilty of her murder. However, when the police did arrest Field for the murder of Peter Farquhar, they found in his possession a list of 100 names of elderly people that would be quote-unquote useful to him. And I actually think Buckingham's been very lucky, because I think we dodged a bullet in terms of there being a serial killer in our midst.
This is isn't it interesting, though, you know, that we talk about this sleepy place, and it must have been quite chilling to read how he's used one of the books as a blueprint for murder, but also he's, you know, absolute psychopathic tendencies, just thinking of himself, not worrying about other people, and having a list of 100 people. That is, if you wrote that in a crime novel, it would be, you know, one of those urban, you know, metropolitan crime novels. You would see a sort of Hannibal Lecter type figure. But obviously, when you're looking at Benjamin Field, outwardly, he's just a normal member of the community.
And indeed, a successful member of the community. It was his ability to manipulate the University of Buckingham, which published his master's dissertation. The University of Buckingham was using him to teach undergraduates. Imagine if your child was an undergraduate in English literature and you're going to be taught by Ben Field. He managed to inveigle his way into the church to the extent, as I said, that he was only 5 days away from ordination training. Can you imagine what things would have been like if he really had become a priest. And I draw attention in the book that there's a parallel here with Harold Shipman. Harold Shipman had used medicine to gain access to the people that he wanted to kill, and the cloak of being a doctor as a way of hiding his malevolent intent. Fields was going to use religion rather than medicine and use the cloak of being a priest to hide his malevolent attempts. And that really is the message from the book, though, because I want those institutions of Middle England to start thinking very clearly at how they can prevent other Ben Fields in the future doing the same.
But again, it's that tight-knit community. It's that I can't believe it's not going to happen here. And it's much easier to say, oh, well, then, you know, I'm not aware if Peter Farquhar had a drinking problem, but he obviously, you know, got out one night on the whiskey and killed himself. And it's much easier to believe that than believe, you know, the actual truth.
That's, I think, it's one of the sadnesses, I think, about the book is I call it weaponized gentility. Everybody wants to see, because we're nice middle-class people in Middle England, everybody wanted to just say, well, look, it's their business. Let's keep that at arm's length. It's their business if they want to do that. Whereas clearly, many people that I interviewed, most of whom didn't want to be quoted in the book, many people that I interviewed would say to me, look, off the record, we knew something wasn't right. We knew something was going wrong. And yet, despite that, nobody was willing to intervene and actually save Peter Farquhar.
Weaponized gentility is a phrase that I will use later on today at some point. I think that's absolutely brilliant. So what was, as you sort of dug and peeled away like the onion-like layers of this, it was one of the most shocking ones that you've discovered about betrayal. What was it like, you know, getting to the bottom of this one? And did Field show any remorse, or presumably he just, in true psychopathic behavior, it didn't even cross his radar?
And that's exactly the right label to use. This was psychopath. I think it was chilling for a number of different elements, not just the fact that this was very close to home. These people could easily have been my neighbours. It was also chilling because of the elements of watching how the books and characters within the books were consciously being aped by Field in relation to what he was doing in real life. Above all, the most chilling thing of all is that Field's father was a minister in Olney, which is in Northamptonshire, very close to Buckingham, but in a different county. And when he was on remand for murder, Field actually preached a sermon at his father's church on the theme of thou shalt not kill. You know, these were extraordinary revelations that one kept encountering, to the extent that even the Crown Prosecution Service would go as far as to say it's like the plot of an Agatha Christie novel. Everybody kept thinking this cannot be real. And the tragedy, of course, was that it was real, and poor Peter Farquhar lost his life.
What do you hope that people will take from your book, A Plot to Kill? I mean, should they just not take things at face value, and if, you know, and maybe keep an eye on that neighbor? I mean, what do you hope? No, but seriously, what do you hope that people discover and people realize from this book?
I hope that what people realize in the book, obviously, as you know, I use Peter's murder to talk more generally about gerontology, about the place of the elderly in our culture. And of course, I started the book before COVID and continued the research for the book during COVID. And if ever a theme of the place of the elderly in our culture was made manifest to me, it was what happened to care homes during the first wave of the pandemic, where at one stage of the pandemic, you know, 400 older people were dying in care homes every single day. And so I hope the bigger issue that people take from the book is just to think seriously about the place of the elderly in our culture and how we can create circumstances in which the elderly truly are part of our culture as opposed to separated off from our culture and simply left in institutions until they die.
The book is called A Plot to Kill, The True Story of Deception, Betrayal and Murder in a Quiet English Town. It's by David Wilson. David, if people want to find out more information about you or about the book, I know you do the social media thing. Where can they find you?
Oh, I've got various things on social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I have a website. And, of course, the book is now available, published last week. And you can get it on all good bookstores and various online sellers.
You'll be able to download it directly from our virtual bookstore as well. The book is called A Plot to Kill. It's by David Wilson. David, enjoy your walk today.
Thank you.
And we'll speak soon. It's been an absolute pleasure. David Wilson, thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much for the interview. I really appreciate it.